Website at Globecast Radio.
Midweek Motorsports with John Hindhoff.
Globecast Radio.
Hello, this is John Hindhoff live from London. And it's Wednesday night, just after 8 o'clock, so that means it's Midweek Motorsport. Joining me in the studio tonight, Tim Gray.
Good evening.
Hello, Tim. Are you fitting well? Have you recovered from the NEC at Birmingham?
It was a very long weekend, wasn't it?
And have you had NEC flu?
No, I've escaped that.
You've done very well to do that.
Had my vaccine.
Yeah, bloke flu, much worse than bird flu. Packed programme tonight as ever, and we'll be squeezing in some or all of the following items. What we got?
Well, let's do it in no particular order. We're going to be talking to Declan Brennan with his ear on the ovals.
Of course.
And some news about NASCAR rookie who's not doing as well as everyone hoped. We'll be looking at the day's or the week's motorsport news headlines.
Plenty of F1 to talk about tonight,
yes,
as well.
We'll be previewing the new series, new season of the World Rally Championship. Starts this weekend with the Monte
classic.
Carlo.
The classic Monte Carlo Rally. And as it's the 75th running of the Monte Carlo, it is actually going to be over some of the more classic roads than in recent years as well. Really looking forward to that. Great start to the season.
We've got a little chat about A1GP, and we'll be talking to one or maybe two A1GP drivers about the forthcoming resumption of
Yes, after the Christmas break, New Zealand, isn't it? First time in New Zealand. Yes.
And of course we've got Call My Huff.
We have got Call My Huff. Who've we got on Call My Huff tonight?
I can't say until it happens.
All right, okay.
I need to keep you in suspense, but I can tell you that it's letters I...
Have we got room for Call My Huff?
It's letters I and J.
Okay.
Only if we keep Declan short.
Oh, okay. Keeping Declan short may be a problem then.
No, it's not. He's only 5'4".
News to come, of course, which I'm sure will be dominated by Formula One, given it's the launch season. And to that end, where will Nick Damon be reporting from for us tonight?
So we arrived yesterday at Valencia Airport. We were met by the unbelievably efficient BMW Sauber staff. I mean, I've never seen so many perfectly turned out, well-toned young German men, young and women. A little bit strength through joy for me, but still very, very efficient. And now we're at the conference centre waiting to go in and see the launch of the new BMW car. Valencia's been the centre of Formula 1 attention the last couple of days with, of course, the spectacular McLaren launch yesterday, where Vodafone must have been rubbing their hands with glee at having Fernando Alonso to sell lots of mobile phones in Spain to. But, of course, they actually closed down the streets. They ran the whole thing. It was they ran the cars and... It was an absolute kind of celebration. In fact, we were sitting in the hotel room, there was about a 17-minute article on the main Spanish news just about the launch of the McLaren. So, as far as a PR exercise goes, a bit of a success, you have to say. So here we are now, and I'm sitting here waiting to go in. I'm really wondering what purpose car launches actually perform. And looking at the faces I don't recognise, and having been in F1 for so many years, you suddenly realise that what it actually enables, it enables the people who can't get a pass to actually get near the cars. There are hundreds of people here who work for small television stations who don't have the rights for F1 in their particular country, or for radio stations, or you know, the internet. I think the total number of internet passes given out by Formula 1 is about 6, and that's been the same for like 10 years, because Bernie doesn't really understand the internet, as we know. And you look around, and there's just thousands and thousands of people here who have no other chance of actually seeing an F1 car running around officially. It's great for the TV crews, because obviously it gives them lots of copyright-free stuff they can use the rest of the season. And obviously it's very good for a company like BMW, because they're trying to sell cars for the road. So it's a kind of a win-win-win situation. These things aren't cheap, but they have put on what looks like an excellent show. And I'm going to make some predictions, as I like to do that, as you know. And I predict that during the launch process, we are... interrupted by Jonathan Ledyard now.
Make your way towards the entrance, take your seat either side of the television and photographer areas, doors are open. Plenty of room, no need to rush.
And there you go, there's the hierarchy of a launch. It's all about TV and cameras. Working with radio, we hadn't even got a slot. I mean, we were trying our hardest to talk to the drivers and everyone else, but to be honest, you know, looking at the slots, it's 3 minutes for each of the major TV stations and a lot of the Germans, obviously, and Austrians. So hopefully we'll get something, but you never can tell. I mean, it's a case of we'll try a bit of doorstep. We might get a couple of comments. But again, looking at the overall thing, once we actually get in there, once we get going, but I predict this. I predict that we're going to see some heavy rock music, hopefully not German heavy rock music. We're also going to see a video wall showing fast-changing images of the car, probably not in race action again, because they don't want to pay Bernie for the copyright either. And finished off with dry ice. So I think dry ice may be passé now, so it might be a laser light show. Either way, I'm going to go in, I'm going to take my seat, obviously not near the television, not near the radio, and we'll see what happens.
Globecast Radio. Love cars. Love motorsport. Love music.
Well, there'll be more from Nick and his reports from the BMW launch at Valencia yesterday throughout tonight's programme. Also, I forgot to mention earlier that we do have two fantastic competitions for you, one this hour and one in the next hour, so listen out for those. But we start tonight with something slightly different. It's our Ear on the Oval from Brennan.
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
And our American news this week starts on a sad note that Benny Parsons, who charmed television audiences with his down-home demeanour as much as he impressed fans with his ability as a driver, died early this week at Carolina's Medical Center in Charlotte following complications from lung disease. He was 65. Benny's racing career came about somewhat by accident. The legend goes that when his parents moved out north to Detroit following World War II, Parsons helped out his dad by working at the family service station. Then in 1963, a pickup truck with a race car behind it stopped at the petrol station for fuel. The young Benny was invited to join them, hopped into the bed of the pickup and went up to the nearby Mount Clemens Speedway. According to the story, when the regular driver of the car failed to show, Parsons volunteered to drive, and he made his first visit to Daytona that same year. Stuff of legend, eh? The self-proclaimed Detroit taxi driver never forgot his humble rural North Carolina roots, and it came through in every aspect of his life. Despite his successful racing career, he understood that his job as broadcast analyst in his later years was to ensure that the spotlight was turned on the new stars and not his own achievements. Parsons was inducted into the International Motorsports Hall of Fame in 1994 and named as one of NASCAR's 50 greatest drivers in 1998. He made his then Winston Cup debut in 1964, but he'll be always remembered for his Cup Championship season in 1973. Joining us on the phone from Massachusetts in America is our Ear on the Oval, Declan Brennan. Declan, a phenomenal season for Benny Parsons in 1973. No pole positions, won it by consistency, and in fact, only had one win chalked up to his name at Bristol, but he wasn't even behind the wheel of the car when it crossed the line that year because he had a pinched nerve, and John Utzman was the reserve driver. He really was one of the first drivers who realised that points could make a championship.
Well, it's fitting that in 1973, the season he won, and with that in mind, the way he won it with 21 top 10s, 15 top 5s out of 28 events, that's considered to be the watershed, the benchmark where the modern era of NASCAR racing started, where it moved away from sort of a locally promoted amateurism to some point, or to some extent, into fully blown professional racing. And so it's fitting he won the championship, and he won it in a style that would probably win him a title now in this era with that level of unbelievable consistency. As he said, 21 top 10s, his average starting position was about 7th, and his average finishing position was, across the season was about 10th. And he won the title through pure grit and determination and consistency, even though David Pearson, obviously the legend that is David Pearson, won 11 out of 18 races he entered. He didn't even enter all of the races that season. But the finale and how it finished is the sort of thing that if you put it in a movie, nobody would believe it, quite frankly.
I wanted to talk about that because in the whole of his NASCAR career, Benny Parsons, I think, had 20, 21 victories, never won at North Carolina Raceway, what we know as Rockingham Raceway, which is in fact only 10 miles from his home, but he won the championship there and won it, as you say, in a fairy tale fashion, because the car was pretty much written off in the first handful of laps, wasn't it?
It was. I think it's about, it was within the first 10 laps that there was he was involved in a heavy crash. In fact, lap 13, I'm just recalling, and he brought the car into the pits, and I think he was fueled and ridden along in a wave of desire of the rest of the pit lane to see Richard Petty lose the title. So they basically did everything they could. The entire pit lane helped to rebuild this car to get it out so he could score any points at all, to just get him as far up in the final standings. And it took 136 laps to repair the car.
Now, remarkably, they took a roll cage out of a car that hadn't qualified. Bear in mind that Parsons' car was on the back of the flatbed, ready to go home. It was a mess. And they actually effectively replaced the roll cage in the car, stripped off all the bodywork, put it all back together. And, of course, being a home lad, when that car went out and he appeared out of the back of the pits and on the pit lane and down the... I remember him... I saw this on ESPN, I'm sure, in the States, where he was talking about it. And he was still emotional all those years later because the fans really willed him through. I think they finished 28th in the end in that race. And that was enough to take the title from Cale Yarborough, who was second, and, as you say, Richard Petty, who was third in the championship.
Petty would have won the title, but he, ironically enough, he had engine trouble and finished 35th. He finished behind Parsons. Absolutely, it's just awfully remarkable. Remarkable.
And, now, we should also mention that he won the Daytona 500 in 1975, which was a big win for Chevrolet. They hadn't won that race since 1960, and that was a long time coming back. But, of course, many of our contemporary listeners, later NASCAR listeners, will only remember him from his broadcast career, which started in 1989 for ESPN.
Well, if you're lucky enough like me, if you're old enough and lucky enough to have been a screen sport viewer in the early days of specialist sports telly, lucky enough, I think I've mentioned this before, we used to get the races delayed in full without interruption on a Wednesday night from the previous Sunday, and there was no internet then, and it was also the day before Autosport came out, so you could watch the races
not knowing who'd won.
There was no other way of knowing him. It was fantastic. And so we got his last two seasons, and he was the elder statesman. He was one of the legends that I'd grown up reading about. And you know, coming from Ireland, we used to get, bizarrely, occasional episodes of ABC's Wide World of Sport. And I'd see some of the big races with Jackie Stewart doing the commentary.
That's right.
For ABC TV, and he'd be involved. And so I knew he was one of the legends of the 70s that I knew almost, you know, sort of new to, by name, but never had seen images, never seen race particularly, and the likes of Petty and, as you said, David Pearson and the Allisons, and he was a legend, and we literally got a couple of years of him running fairly competitively in the races that we saw for those two seasons before he moved into the commentary booth. And he always, what I always remember about him, particularly in the commentary box, and this is the thing I think that one of the reasons he won an Emmy for his work is that I think you can't say it any better than the way you put it. It was always about saying the right thing at the right time, never talking too much, always putting the focus on what was going on.
Correct.
Almost saying what you'd say yourself, but you know, because it came from him and he'd lived through it, and he's, you know, go on YouTube, you'll find some of the most spectacular finishes of races in the 70s, and he's in the thick of them. There's that one particular finish, the Winston 500 in 75. He didn't win it, unfortunately. He finished second in an epic four-way dice for the finish with himself, Cale Yarborough, Darrell Waltrip, and Bobby Allison. Donnie Allison, I should say. Absolutely insane. But he'd been there, bought the T-shirt, but he never, ever...
He didn't trade on that, though, did he?
No, he didn't.
He didn't push it down your throat. And I think, quite frankly, what he did in the broadcast booth was extraordinary. Because There have always been experts who have been sportsmen, the jock mentality, if you like, and in fact it seems to have taken over almost entirely in sporting commentary nowadays. In fact, if you haven't been a reasonable sportsman, it seems difficult to get a job. But what Benny brought to it, I feel, and it's something that I think we need to look at more closely nowadays, is he brought that humility that you've been talking about. He brought the experience, but what he also did, Dex, he never forgot the fans, and he was reading the race all the time and trying to do, and this is something that so many TV commentators and experts don't do, he was trying to add to the pictures, not just describing what he was seeing.
Absolutely. And of course, when he did, you always knew he was going to say something that was worth listening to, and
yes,
that was going to totally and utterly add to the experience. It was in sad in a way that his work was for NBC and TNT, so we only got a fraction of him during every season. And he'd been a stalwart of ESPN
up until 2001, yeah, 89 to 2001.
One of the nice things about the ESPN deal was that I felt was that there was a chance we were going to see a lot more of him. The humility he had and his love of the sport, which always came through, certainly much was to the fore when a lot of the drivers at Daytona in the last couple of days spoke out about what it meant, yes, what he meant to them.
Dex, I was going to say, you know, one always says in these moments, well, he'll be missed up and down the pit lane. But never was that more true than Benny Parsons, because there was a genuine affinity with everyone who worked there, the pit crews. And, you know, he started off his broadcast career as an analyst. He didn't do a lot of pit reporting, but he was universally liked down in the pits. He spoke their language. He'd done that, worn the T-shirt, and there is, I mean, you tell me how it's been covered in the States, but certainly just looking at the internet, the amount of tributes that's coming in, and really heartfelt tributes, not just the, oh, we better knock something off because someone's kicked the bucket,
absolutely.
You know.
Darryl Waltrip said he was the nicest man he ever met. And again, it's one of the things that came across on TV. My favourite, it's slightly sad, but my favourite words that I heard from anybody this week was from Matt Kenseth, who said the last time he saw him was at the finale at Homestead this last season. And during practice, Benny was, he said he was sitting in the garage chatting, he said, and he had a big smile on his face. He had his oxygen tank with him. You know, he was struggling, but he said he clearly wasn't well, he said, but nothing stopped him enjoying himself, nothing stopped him smiling and talking and just being a part of what he loved to do. And this was, he was struggling then because he was, his lung wasn't functioning properly. He was certainly in a bad way and effectively, certainly the likelihood of him coming back into the commentary box at that stage, and the likelihood of him living too long at that stage was unclear. But he nothing was going to stop him going and being around the sport that he absolutely loved. I've got some other little facts and figures that I've dug out which I love, and sort of stuff that you'd never be able to take away from him. For example, he's the only driver to have won the ARCA and NASCAR title.
Fantastic.
He won the ARCA championship in 68 and 69, and one of my favourites is first driver to officially qualify at over 200 miles an hour.
You can never take that away.
No, at 1982, the Winston 500 at Talladega. As I said, if anybody has the opportunity, go on YouTube and go and look up the 1975 finish at Talladega. It's phenomenal, and he timed his run wrong, but it's magnificent to watch. 88 was his last season, and then in that time, between doing his broadcasting work, he was also heavily involved in Jack Roush's Gong Show, which, as we know, every year is basically a behind the scenes talent spotting exercise, and he was probably the most instrumental in discovering Greg Biffle.
Absolutely. So, Dex, thanks for that.
No problem.
Benny Benny Parsons, diagnosed with lung cancer in July 2006. He announced in October he was in full remission, but went into hospital on December the 26th and sadly died on January the 16th. Benny Parsons, a real loss to NASCAR, and we pass our respects and good wishes and thoughts on to his friends and family, many of whom, of course, will be involved in NASCAR, who are certainly mourning the passing of one of their greats today. Let's move on to some more American news. Tim, what stories have you got for us?
Let's move into single-seaters and Champ Car particularly, who've announced two races in Europe for the forthcoming season.
Yes!
They're going to be going to Assen in Holland, or the Netherlands, on September the 2nd, and then Zolder in Belgium on September the 9th.
So, following weekend, yes.
They've obviously looked at a map of Europe, thought, what's right in the middle that's going to be easily accessible for everyone, and gone for Belgium.
Now, what I feel is interesting here is that Champ Car World Series Tony Johnson has said that although he's not going to give total details of the length of the deals, they are a multi-year agreement. But he did say that those agreements wouldn't preclude the possibility of other European tracks joining the Champ Car calendar, including, and he mentioned this specifically, the long-rumoured Greek event at the old airport in Athens.
Which we dismissed last week.
Yeah, as a bit of hobbity-tosh. And possibly an event in... Well, it's just fairy tale, isn't it? And possibly an event in France. Now, this year, they're launching six venues, of course. Las Vegas, Zhuhai, Saint-Gervais, and Phoenix. So I think that would have put them up to 17 for next year. But apparently Denver is going to disappear because long-term sponsor Centrix, is it, Dex, who sponsored that
race? The venue, it's a shame, really, because I don't think the track was ever particularly popular, but the event was always quite a successful one.
What do you reckon to these two European dates? I mean, Champ Car is calling itself a World Series, but Assen and Zolder, I know there was some worry about Zolder, particularly about the elevation changes, that the cars might get airborne, and they're going to do some work on that. But traditionally, when those cars come to Europe, the fans want to see them on something other than road tracks.
Well, Assen, a long track, from the amount of motorcycle racing I watch them there, a pretty exciting track. Mm. Although the question that any fan of bike racing would raise here is, Assen couldn't nearly be wide enough.
Well, it's all right because there's no overtaking.
Yeah,
it's fine.
You know, it
builds itself as America's Formula One, and clearly it's going that way as the overtaking reduces year on year.
I think Assen could be. It's really difficult to tell. I'd like to think it's going to be an exciting race.
Why have they chosen road circuits when we've seen when they've been in the UK? They came to Brands Hatch and it was, in quotes, just another open wheel event, close quotes. When they come to the purpose built ovals like Rockingham and Lausitzring, it's something different and it's something to hang their hat on.
The problem, frankly, we don't
need any more open wheel racing cars in Europe because, unlike other parts of the world, as we've mentioned before with A1GP, why A1GP doesn't do so well in Europe is because we've already got Formula One.
Nobody actually went to the Lausitzring, though, and nobody goes to the Lausitzring for anything.
It is in the middle of nowhere. One of the problems with the Lausitzring is it's just miles from anywhere.
Nobody goes there to watch DTM. Nobody goes there to watch F3 Euro Series.
That's
nobody
because they don't use the Oval.
Nobody went there to watch A1GP, and nobody went there to watch Champ Car.
And nobody really went there to watch Days of Thunder either.
People go there to watch the bikes, interestingly, because the infield circuit's very good for bikes. Actually, the infield circuit, much like Rockingham in the UK, is actually a better circuit than it's given credit for, particularly for touring cars. Anyway,
why... Let's go back to the issue here. First of all, the Dutch sponsorship and Dutch drivers are going to be quite prevalent in Champ Car next year, and it makes a lot of sense for there to be a Dutch race.
Right.
And especially if Jos is involved, because Jos Verstappen is he's a bit like he just changed his name to Jos 50,000 people on the gate, because you put Verstappen into anything in competitive or major in Holland and you'll get a huge crowd.
Well, you say that, but if we look at A1GP this year, which went to Holland and everyone was expecting Jos to be racing for the Dutch team, and then he didn't, and they put Jeroen Bleekemolen in his place. They were expecting hundreds of thousands of people to demand their money back, but actually fewer than 5% of the people.
Yes, that's because they'd already bought their tickets, Tim. Well, I think it would have been a different matter.
Let's clear this up. Yes, there was a massive advance sales, which proves the interest. Massive advance sales
out.
For the A1 race before he pulled out. And Jeroen Bleekemolen nearly won, and I think people were quite happy in the end because they nearly got a Dutch victory, and they got a fantastic race, one of the best single-seater races I've seen in the last 5 years.
I think that would have been a different kettle of fish, or whatever they have, a different finger in the dike, if Jos had said he wasn't driving before those tickets had gone on sale. It would have been much easier for people not to buy them than to, you know, once you've got them, you don't go, oh, I'm going to have to go through all the rigmarole to get my money back. I might as well just go. I might enjoy it. I think that would have been different. I do think he's a big draw. It would be like having, you know, Nigel Mansell or... I don't know. Nigel Mansell, Damon Hill, and Johnny Herbert all in the same race at Silverstone.
And I think they'll guarantee, from what we hear already, the advance sales are phenomenal for the Assen race. I think that probably means that race is going to be quite a success. Mm. And it makes sense to bring that part, to bring these guys over for more than one event.
It's the only way they can make the travel costs work, isn't
it? Exactly, and John, as you and I know from the work we did at Rockingham in the promotion of Champ Car races, it makes vastly more sense for them to be here for more than one race. And geographically, Zolder makes great sense. Zolder has been starved of top line racing of this type for quite a while.
Disgracefully
I think
opinion.
Renault might argue with that.
Yeah, but they could argue all they like, but it's not top line racing. This is one of
the featured circuits of the Renault World Series by Renault Series.
Yeah, like
powered by Nissan.
Yeah. Next, you'll be telling us that a classic Formula 2 is a top line. Back to the point. So
I'd watch it. I know you would too, Dex.
Yeah, I know I would too. You're very. So one of the other issues, of course, is travel costs, and based in Northern Europe and having those two races together makes a lot of sense. Zolder, I believe. To account for the demand that they have, are actually building more grandstands. So,
now here's a question, Dex. They're only a week apart. Are they actually too close together geographically as well as time-wise? Because when we had one in the UK and one in Germany, you could reasonably say that you were servicing two parts of the European marketplace. Here, I mean, there's less than a day's drive between them. It's like, you know, having one round at Croft and the next round at Alton Park.
I'd say less than that. It's more like Crofton Teesside Raceway, isn't it?
Have you ever been to Teesside Raceway?
Do you think Steve Johnson's listening to this? I might actually say, oh, hang on, write that down. Croft, and then the following week, Teesside Raceway.
Champ Car at Langbar. You see, now there's a headline you'd love to see in motorsport news, isn't it? Champ Car at Langbar. Well, that'd be just phenomenal.
I'm fairly certain that two things will happen. There's enough interest across the two territories for the two events to work, and you may well get people going to both. It's two pretty exciting and particularly interesting circuits, both very fan friendly. Well, particularly Assen. I don't really see that much of a problem.
Only thing that I would say about this, Dex, is what we, and you mentioned it earlier on, that what we found out when Champ Car came to Europe before, unfortunately, none of the European arms of the sponsors of any of these cars, even if they do have European arms, are interested in sponsoring it. I mean, I remember that HP, wasn't it? It was one of the Williams sponsors, anyway, that was Compaq, who was on the side of one of the Champ Cars, just was not interested because they were putting all their money into Formula One.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and I wonder just how much of a success it will be financially. The first year is never a problem. Big crowds. It looks like it makes sense. But it costs, you know, and I know that every one of those teams and all the officials will have to be paid for by the organisers of those races in addition to whatever sanction fee that Champ Car World Series are asking for. And I just wonder if once again we've got somebody who thinks it's a good idea and then it falls flat on it, what's it, after a season or two seasons.
Well, don't forget, Paul Stoddart's involvement means we will have involvement from the Dutch sponsors and the people who were involved.
And he can lend them some planes, which is in fact what we were going to do at Rockingham to bring them across the third year, if they come across the third year.
Paul Stoddart does have a lot of Dutch connections, remember?
Yeah, he does, and his sponsors are keenly behind this, and I think they'll want to make it work. As I said at the start, it's a lot of this comes down to the fact there's a huge Dutch lobby entering into Champ Car. I'm pretty excited. I'd like to think there'll be a fair few Britons going across, particularly for the Zolder race.
Yeah. I think what we might see, Declan, is people taking a nice 10-day trip across to Holland and Belgium, and I'm sure the Belgian Tourist Board will be ecstatic that there are maybe 5,000 or 10,000 Britons going across and spending the in-between week in northern Belgium.
Well, it's perfect. You know why? It's right at the beginning of the school term, so the kids have gone back to school, the ferries will be quieter, and I think as a trip away that could be absolutely superb. The other thing I would say is I think they should make those two races just for some interest. If they can get someone to sponsor it, they should have like a European trophy and make those two races a little series within a series, like they used to do with the Oval Crown in some of the series in the States.
I think that's not a bad idea. I also believe
we've got decent telly.
Beg your pardon?
I hope we've got some decent telly for us.
Well, I think Eurosport will be delighted because it's obviously it's right up their street to have it, and they'll obviously commit to it live, and it'll be in prime time.
That's subject to them signing a deal to do it at all.
Yes, that's very true.
Exactly.
That's very true.
Motorsport on television is one of my rants at the moment, which will not get in.
What a surprise!
We're not going to get onto that right now. Okay, let's move on. Another story, Tim, please.
Declan, I know, wants to talk about Ashley Force.
Indeed.
John Force's daughter, who...
One of John Force's large contingent of quite attractive daughters.
She has been doing very well indeed in everything up to Top Fueler.
She's been running Top Alcohol.
Yes, yeah. So I was just going to say, is she going to make the move into Top Fuelers? That's the question.
She has made the move, but not Top Fuel. She's making the move to Funny Car.
Oh, now you see, I'm surprised and a little disappointed with that, because in all the interviews I've ever seen in things like Racer Magazine and when I've been in the States watching on ESPN, she's always said she would stay away from Funny Cars because of the association with her father.
I think she's doing the right thing. She wants to be the first woman. No woman has ever reached a finals round in an NHRA Funny Car event. I believe there's 11, I think it's maybe even 12, I beg your pardon, there's 10 women, it's 10 women who have been licensed to drive Funny Cars.
Right.
And only 7 have ever qualified for an NHRA national event, and none have reached the finals.
You can't say that she hasn't got the best possible opportunity with the amount of backing, or at least the amount of advice she can get from her father.
You know, Castrol aren't stupid either, and you know, this is fantastic.
Are they on board?
Of course they are. Castrol and the Force organisation have pretty much got a deal for life. Now check this
rightly
out.
Rightly so.
Check this out. You love this. She has been clocked at 4.809 seconds at 320 miles an hour in testing at Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
She's going to need to find another 10 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You know, and I can just say that without a hint of irony, because if you, even in a funny car, if you're not doing close to 230 miles an hour, you're not really... No, she's about on it there, actually, when I think about it, because those are Top Fuel times I was talking about. That's just phenomenal, isn't it?
Barking mad.
And let's not forget, in a funny car, unlike a Top Fueler, that throbbing mass of 1600 brake horsepower held together with straps and a bit of impact adhesive is actually sitting in between your legs right in front of you.
John, did you say 1600?
Oh, well.
Multiply that by 5.
5,000.
8,000.
8,000, oh God.
8,000 horsepower that they take out, clean, and put back together between runs. But she's going to be a... she'll have a rookie crew chief as well, which, and obviously in I wouldn't normally mention that, but in obviously the crew chief, particularly in drag racing, is arguably as important as the driver. You know, in terms of the way how it's all about the preparation of these things and
that and your clutch man.
Yes, absolutely. So it's very exciting. She's a good looking girl, very good looking, and she obviously appeared in the reality show that the Force family did. In the last couple of years, basically, a camera crew followed John around as he reconnected with his growing daughters as he winds down his career, a bit like Hogan Knows Best or one of these other. So she, you know, rose to prominence, and all of the sisters are involved in the team.
Oh, really?
One of them, another one, the younger one races. One of them does the finances. So and she's now racing. So. Good luck to her. We have an influx of top line females now running in the United States because, of course, there'll be 3 IRL women next year. As we sit now, Milka Duno, Sarah Fisher, and she who will not be named will be racing in the IRL in 2007.
Is racing the right term?
No, it's competing.
Driving.
I think there's enough of them now to give them their
steering.
Own championship.
No, to be honest, I hope Sarah Fisher gets a competitive drive, because if she does, I think it'll be very interesting to see how she goes. Milka, I've seen Milka Duno drive in sports cars, and in point of fact, she's not a bad peddler. However, what I will say is she does not like walls being up close, because even on the street races that we did in the American Le Mans series, her performance fell off markedly when we were at places like Miami, which wasn't a very fast circuit, but it was very tight, and it had and obviously the walls were right at the edge of the circuit. Also Washington, she just was not on her game. She likes wide runoffs. She likes to know that she can make a mistake and get it back, because she does actually drive quite quickly, and I think that she'll suffer on the ovals, definitely in the straight circuits.
She didn't cover herself in glory in the inaugural season of when it was the Telefonica World Series. She did some races and she was very poor.
She was champion in Grand Am with Andy Wallace, don't forget. And whatever you say about that, and whatever you say about how good Wallace is, you can't have a total rabbit as the second driver in endurance racing events. So
I'll tell you what you will have as well is that, don't forget, is that Citgo, the Venezuelan national oil company, are putting an enormous amount of, and they will back her heavily.
Be interesting just to see how she who shall not be named copes with a little bit of competition as far as the fastest female stakes go. It's just a shame Catherine Legg's not in that championship as well.
I think it's about time that we stopped giving
another 12 months. There'll be one series.
True.
I think it's about time we made a stand here and decided not to give she who shall not be named any further publicity until a time as she does anything good.
Well, if that racing driver was a race, if you just judge that racing driver on the racing, and funny enough, I was having this conversation with Liz Halliday at the weekend at the Autosport International Show. We, and, you know, Dex, Tim, you'll bear me out on this, we treat those drivers like drivers. Clearly they are females, and you know, we're not saying that we don't treat them as females, but once they're in the car, they're not females. They're just another driver out in the track. That's what they always say. And if you applied that to that driver that we've just been talking about, who we're not going to mention, then we would not be talking about her, other than the fact to say, how does she manage to keep a job in a decent team? Because her results do not warrant it.
Correct. Anyway.
Moving on.
That's a nice base for us to start for the rest of the season on that.
I agree. Okay. Oh, hang on. I've got someone on the phone from her solicitors.
Moving on.
Get right, Dex, moving on.
Not really US news, but something which Declan has a little interest in, being Irish, and that is the goings-on at A1 Team Ireland in A1 GP. Michael Devaney out as their driver, and in comes Gary Anderson as technical director.
Yeah, he's not going to drive Gary Anderson,
is he?
He's not. Although I have seen him drive Jordans up the hill at Goodwood,
yes.
And he's remarkably quick. He really is quick. Who's going to replace Devaney then?
Richard Lyons, who's very Irish.
Yes, and yes, another case of putting a man in the car who at one stage in the past has raced with a Union Jack on his overall stroke helmet. Yes, so let's move on. So now it's a big issue this, because the team has struggled for pace all season. After Michael Devaney got in the car last year and really began showed Ralph Fearman up severely, I thought, in terms of his performances, started to run very, very well, had two fourth place finishes, started to qualify well, and was certainly beginning to generate a bit of race experience and hone his racecraft. It was sad to see what's happened this year with the team. They've moved away from Arden, who were running the team for them last year. They're running it themselves, and quite frankly, it's been an unmitigated disaster so far. And looks like Devaney has gone. Looks like he's heading across the Atlantic. Now, again, for our older listeners who will be aware of Michael's father, Bernard Devaney, who was a leading light in race chevrons in British Formula 3 in the late 70s, and then raced for Mike Earle, amongst others, in Formula 2 in 1980. He also then went to the States and did some racing over there and has some strong connections. So I think it's not a bad career move. And obviously he's also a very good friend of Derek Daly. So I think that they will, between them, I think they have enough connections to potentially land him something solid next season in Atlantic.
So. Yeah, and Gary Anderson, what effect is that going to have?
I think it can only be positive. I think Gary Anderson is he's not quite a genius level like an Adrian Newey.
But he can't be in that type of scenario, Dex, because it's a single make formula. So it's about just helping. I think it's just about helping the car get set up and basically trying to get the car competitive as soon as it comes out of the truck, because clearly they can't go away and re-engineer the car and stick a different set of bodywork on it.
No, but I think this championship and single make series are all about that little bit extra. How do you find that tiny last bit? How do you find the difference?
That's right.
You know, and I think Gary Anderson can certainly help them with that. I think his experience is enough that it will help them, because I think partly they've got to go back to, not necessarily back to basics, but they've got to look at everything they're set up again and how it's going to work, because they've lost their way completely this year with their own team. So I think Anderson, his experience will be vital for them.
And he has, of course, worked with Richard Lyons in the past when Richard was racing in Japan. So there may be, I'm not saying cart and horse and putting one before the other, but you make your own decisions about that.
He wasn't working with Richard Lyons the year that Richard Lyons won the title, though, which is
No, he wasn't, which is, could be significant.
And the other thing is that Gary Anderson, this time last year, joined the Racing Engineering GP2 team to work with Adam Carroll and quit after two races, with Carroll having not scored any points at all by that point. He blamed the conflict between actually having to work on a car and his TV commitments. Now, obviously, on A1GP, he doesn't have those TV commitments, does he?
No, indeed not. Final story
I do believe, as well as that Michael Devaney's made a critical career decision here.
Because I think he's looked
at this team and the way it is at the moment, and it's at the moment his career, to continue to race with them, it's a career killer. Now, through my vast network of contacts within the Irish motor racing world,
I know everybody in Irish motorsport, don't you?
Of course I do, yeah, there's four of us.
And you're all related.
And we've had all of them on the radio, I think, at some point or another. I think it's important that he's made a decision himself that he needs to move. He needs to, if he stays there any longer, he can be in a position where can't go anywhere else where, you know, it'll have done his career too much damage. So I think he's making the right decision. And best of luck to him. And I hope we'll be chatting to him a bit more at some stage in the near future about his plans this side of the Atlantic.
OK, Declan, very quickly, we've just got 2.5 minutes left to talk about the Daytona 500 testing, and something's happened with AJ Allmendinger.
Yes, he's been rubbish, is what's happened with AJ Allmendinger.
Said a spokesman.
Spokesman for Red Bull said it clearly hasn't given him wings. In fact,
I bet they didn't. Yes. Now this is a massive, massive disappointment for the team, for the driver himself, but also for NASCAR, isn't it? Because they were really hoping that this influx of single seat, young single seat American talent would do the sport the power of good, and clearly Allmendinger hasn't. Being able to apply his skill to these £3,500 race cars?
Well, not yet. Yeah, let's give him a teeny weeny weeny little bit of slack here. But so far, he hasn't been up to speed in the Toyota.
And
the new chassis, you know, he's got. There's an awful lot for him to learn. Obviously he's raced trucks. He hasn't really had any real experience in these cars up to now. And he's got a lot. On saying that, he's got a lot of speed to find. He has a lot of speed to find between now and the start of February,
which is just 3 weeks away. Declan Brennan with Ear on the Oval for this week. Thank you very much.
No problem.
If it's happening in motorsport, you'll hear about it on Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport.
Globecast Radio's definitive international motorsport magazine show.
Globecast Radio.
Okay, now walked inside the inner sanctum of the presentation, and we're greeted by a video wall, obviously, and three large screens, an area where obviously everyone's going to sit and talk, and a kind of a large sort of pod. It looks like kind of a half a sphere of the Earth, which also seems to be conveniently car-shaped, so I expect the spectacular launch is either going to be this being lifted up or falling down. And at that point, I expect we're going to see a car. Now, I can't see dry ice generators, which is a bit disappointing, so it looks like they have gone for the video wall and the laser light show. Drivers all coming, just seen Nick Heifel sporting a very interesting beard, looks like Grizzly Adams in a racing driver, and then she just went to the toilet and actually saw something that looked remarkably like Juan Pablo Montoya, which made me look twice, not obviously at the toilet but at his face, but it wasn't him, surprisingly. And just see Giorgio Piola. Giorgio Piola is the guy who does all the technical drawings in Autosport and other magazines, and everyone's like, what a marvellous drawer he is, but what he actually does, he takes photographs and then he traces over them, so he's a bit like my 3-year-old really in that respect. He's a very good tracer, but again, he's made a huge career out of it, so you can't really criticise him. Anyway, we'll just sign off for now, but I expect you'll come back and you'll find some exciting kind of meaningless statements about, you know, not trying too hard and pose and wins, but we still don't know, is it German rock music, is it lasers, or is it dry ice? We now have the traditional shot where the drivers are sitting on the front wheels. I think we've seen that in every single magazine ever. Two drivers sitting on the front wheels. Later on, the test driver will probably sit in the middle of the car, and they all look terribly awkward. What I think that's quite interesting was that there are, of course, six people up there. Five of them are native German speakers, and the other one is a Pole and speaks fluent German. But yet, the language of Formula 1 is English, everything done in English, and you know, they're all pretty well-versed. The other thing is, it's a bit of a Grizzly Adams story up there, because if you actually look at the drivers...
Okay, if the flashes can stop TV cameras now, you get your shots. Give us away when you've got what you need, and we'll move on to the next one.
It's an interesting looking bunch. You've got Sebastian Vettel, who looks like a 14-year-old American sort of David Cassidy look-alike. You've got Nick Heidfeld with his new Grizzly Adams beard. Robert Kubica, who I've not seen before but in person, but really has one of the biggest noses in history.
Okay.
Don't know where this area is now. Perhaps they put it in the wind tunnel. Who knows?
Next one is to turn the car.
Now what they're doing now is they're doing the photographs. They're moving the car around, and they take it 90 degrees, photographs, and TV cameraman. It's all very, very standard stage stuff, but interesting nonetheless.
Midweek Motorsport with John Hindhoff.
Broadcast Radio.
Okay, the main glitzy launch is over, and now it's the round-by-round world of media interviews. They've whisked the drivers upstairs for the TV interviews, and we have the media interviews for the drivers, and then they'll come down and for the team principals, and they'll swap over in an hour's time. So there's 2 hours basically of talking about stuff. Drives me 3-minute slots for TV, like an open house forum down here for the written, and I think also radio journalist, though we're still waiting for our slot, which is interesting. Had a very nice chat. Nick Heidfeld, unfortunately, of course, off the record, because they can't interview until they get the official slot. Who, of course, I've known for a very long time, known from his former 3,000 days. We had a nice chat about his home life, his family, his children, and he had to hear about mine, so that's not quite so good. He was very happy. Not sure about the beard, really not sure about the beard, but he seems very relaxed and certainly very much at home and with the team leader role. He's got a big challenge, of course. He's got to hold off Robert Kubica, who's very, very quick. But I think Nick's always been underestimated. And I think it's going to be very, very close. But I think he has the experience. I think he has the drive. And if you literally look at results from last season, he was quicker than Robert just about everywhere. But, of course, Robert had a couple of good results and also had that impetus of being new and single-handedly igniting the interest of Poland in Formula One. I did ask Nick actually about what he thought TV would be like in Germany. He said he thought, you know, without Michael, it's going to be down, but, you know, not significantly, he hoped, because there are still many Germans. But it's quite known that the Germans, known RTL particularly, the German TV, are very, very worried about their viewing figures. They're looking at drops of 60%. And it's no coincidence, of course, that we now no longer have two races in Germany. We just have the alternating race currently in Nürburgring, because the crowds won't come. Yes, you can get 200,000 overweight Germans drinking beer for a truck Grand Prix, but they won't come to Formula 1 anymore. And I think the video is about to start, which I may just take the sound off and we'll see what happens.
Right, we're giving you a chance to win with Midweek Motorsport, Globecast and Silverstone, as we're offering up a couple of weekend passes to the FIA GT Championship, which is at the Northamptonshire circuit on
Easy
May
for you to say.
Bank. Yes, clearly, as I live there. Where do you live? Near Northampton. The FIA GT is at the Northamptonshire circuit. See, I still can't do it. Maybank Holiday, and you could be our and Silverstone's guest for the whole 3-day meeting. All you've got to do is cast your mind back to 1997.
That's 10 years ago.
Yep, 10 years ago. Absolutely remarkable to think that I was watching sports car races that far away, dear, and a bit more. The
another
final
decade.
Yes, another century, mate. The FIA GT Championship finished its season in America in 1997.
It did.
Now, what I would like to know is, because effectively it was the World Sports Car Championship that year as well, what I would like to know is, where was the final race of the 1997 Championship run? Now, this is a text question, so sadly, if you're not in the UK, you can't enter. If you've got a mobile phone, then you need to get on it now and text the word motorsport, all one word, and either A, B or C corresponding to the answers that I'm about to give you. So in 1997, was the final round of the FIA GT Championship in answer A, Watkins Glen, answer B, Homestead in Florida, or answer C, Laguna Seca? A, B or C to 60300. Text the word motorsport, then your answer. Text
and
will
then
cost
your name.
Do you want a name
very
as well?
Important that you text your name, yes, because otherwise we don't know. When we phone you back to say you're a winner, we say, hello, is that to the person whose phone number is 07?
Yeah, okay. Okay, so
whereas we could be saying, hello, is that John? Congratulations, you've won a pair of tickets to Silverstone.
Right, okay, fine. So you're just making it more complicated now. So text the word motorsport.
I think motorsport, most people are capable of writing their name.
Text the word motorsport, a space, then your letter A, B or C, then your name, to 60300. Texts will cost you £1. Network charges may apply, but you could be coming to Silverstone as a guest of the circuit and of Midweek Motorsport. And if you'd like more details on that, I presume it's going to be on the website.
Indeed, you can. We've already got one lucky winner who won a pair of tickets to the FIA GTs at Silverstone by entering our competition at the Autosport International Show last week. So we've given away one pair of tickets to this already. We've got two more pairs to give away tonight, so get texting. And later on in the show, in the second hour of the show, we'll have another competition for you as well.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh, what are we giving away that time?
Formula One tickets.
To Silverstone?
To Silverstone.
Fantastic! Right,
and
okay. I'm very excited
about that. We'll be getting Nick Damon to come up with a question for that one. So stay tuned if you're less interested in sports cars, but you definitely want to go and see the Grand Prix at Silverstone.
Now, ticket sales are already up for Silverstone because they are selling them at last year's prices before the end of... Is it
January,
next month?
Yes.
January.
Only until the end of... only until January the 31st you can get the 3-day pass with grandstand seat at a reduction on this year's price, because you just pay last year's price.
Nick, it's very obvious actually from the press conference you've assumed the role of team leader, being a senior driver. Is it something you enjoy?
Usually not, but the questions today were okay.
I mean, you are very much leading the team, you're significantly older and more experienced than the other drivers. I mean, does that mean you think you can now much more influence the way the team develops?
No, I mean, it doesn't matter how old you are or how experienced you are, really, in terms of how hard you can push the team. If you have good ideas, if you're quick, if you do a good job, it doesn't matter, you know. There might be such thing as a number one status on paper, but in real life, nobody gives a damn, you know. I've been number two driver in the past, but then it changed after half a year. Imagine now me being a second slower all the time than the other drivers. What do you think? How long I would be number one driver? So it all doesn't really matter.
Talking about that, obviously last year you started off as the new boy in the team. It was Jacques' team, but very quickly you overcame him and in a way led to his downfall. I mean, what did you take from that personally?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry for Jacques, because I think he did a good job, and I think it was underrated what he did. But it was not really a new team for me, because I've been with Sauber for 3 years before that, so I pretty much knew a lot of the people that are important to me, and it was not difficult for me.
Now, it's interesting you say that with Sauber when they were an independent, now they're a manufacturer team. How has that changed, and how has that improved what you can do?
It has improved a lot, because we have a lot more people, a lot more development coming. If you remember in the days of Sauber, quite often we started the season off with a good car, but then we fell back. And this year was the other way around. We had a lot of new parts coming and improved towards the end of the season, by which we managed to secure fifth position in the championship. And for me personally, it's also quite a big difference, because one thing that is a bit more difficult is that you have a lot more people, and so you have more people you can speak to if you need to change something. But then again, it's positive, because things are coming quicker, and also I have to push a lot less hard for things to change. Things are just coming by themselves.
Do you feel at last you're going to have a chance to realise your potential? Because you came into Formula 1, as you mentioned earlier on, as one of those very hyped youngsters. You had a difficult season, obviously, with Prost, and then a very good season with Sauber. And you've had this up and down career, haven't you, really?
Yeah, but as you just said, I think it's more a car thing. With the Prost car, it was impossible to do anything. 2001, we had a good car, and we were fourth in the championship. And I hope that at least before I finish my career, of course, my goal is to be world champion, but for me, it would be tough not ever having had the chance to fight for the championship because I'm not having a good car, so then I would never know.
Talk about good cars. I mean, you get a chance to drive this one in a couple of hours' time, but from the figures, from the numbers, how far a bigger step do you believe it will be over last year's?
It will be quite a big step for sure, and Willy says that they matched all the numbers they set themselves, so it should be a good car in theory, but... we've had things like this in the past, not only with Sauber, but with other teams, that you think it's good, then you drive it, and it's not. I don't expect that, because our wind tunnel seems to be very reliable, and we've made good progress last year. But, you know, it's one of the most special days of each season, to go out with the first car for the very first time. Even if you don't set lap times quickly, once you get close to the limit, you get a feeling for the car, and that usually is already telling you something.
And simply aims for the season?
I want to be better than 8th position in the Drivers' World Championship, because that's my best position previous. And on the Constructors' side, it's the same. We were 5th, I hope that we will finish at least 4th.
So if you were, say, 6th, but Rolt was 5th, would you be happy?
No.
Thanks, Nick. Rolt Kubica, this time last year, you were at the BMW Sauber launch as a test driver. How surprised are you to be the race driver now?
Well, I'm happy, but not surprised. I mean, I was trying to do my best, and it shows that my skills and what I have done last year, it was enough to be confirmed this year, and that makes me very happy.
What do you feel is the secret of success? We've seen other drivers come in, not make an impression, but you just hit the ground running.
Well, I think it's a long process of preparation to Formula One. It's everything what I have done since I started racing, and of course, when I was 10 years old, of course, I learned something, and it takes, step by step. And last season, before last season, 2005 was very important for me. I did a very good season in Formula World Series. I did Formula 3 good race in Macau, and I come back. Everybody says that I'm stupid because after winning World Series, I should, stay home, and I have much more to lose. But I like racing, I like Macau, and I think it was a good challenge. Especially, that I use Honda engine and everybody was using Mercedes, which was much stronger. And then I did good season with good test with Renault. That was, I think, the key moment of this time that I'm here.
And what's your biggest challenge facing you this year?
I mean, the challenge, always there is challenge, and I'm kind of the driver which put target very high for personal driving, and I think if our car will be performing well, we can do some good results, but we have to see, wait till Australia where we'll be compared the competition.
Now, you've got 7 races of experience. Nick Heidfeld's got 7 years. I mean, are you trying to beat him or just match him this year?
I mean, it's never easy. I was surprised that my pace straight away in Hungary, Monza, Turkey, all Grand Prix were pretty close, sometimes quicker. So, it's not easy to compare the one rookie guy to with the guy who is 8 years in Formula One, and that gives me confidence. But I think with the new tires I will have a difficult life, especially in the beginning of the season. I hope to find good setup. I hope the car will help me with the rear stability, and then if I gain rear stability, I will be again quick.
Is that down to the chassis being developed in your direction rather than perhaps Nick's, because Nick's a very smooth driver?
I don't think it was some direction. I mean, the teams know how I drive, and they have to analyze if it's good their way, and I think it shows in some occasion that was really good to drive like this, and maybe the team chose this direction. And for sure our car from last year were my driving were upsetting some points, but this year car I think it's more done for to help me.
Now obviously you need as much track time as possible, but you're going to be losing one of the Friday sessions to Sebastian. Do you feel that is a potential problem?
I mean, it's a difficult case, I think the problem will become if the other regular drivers of top teams they are running, because of course you lose your time on the track and you lose time of set up the car. If there will be no problem if you come straight away, for example, to Australia and you have good setup straight away, and then that will be easy. But the problem will become if you have problems to set up the car, if you have problems, and always it's better to drive yourself. But the top teams, we want to see what they are doing. I want to see, and if it will happen that we are standing in the box and they are running, then we'll be, of course, a bit more disadvantaged.
This is your first full season in Formula One. What are you most looking forward to?
I'm looking for consistent driving. I learned it that to make good results you have to be consistent, and I hope that I can keep consistency as it was last year, without repeating some mistakes maybe from some Grand Prix, and then it should be okay.
About to go to the track now. Just finish the driver part of it, though we still need to talk to a couple of the guys. Very interesting up there. 4 drivers, Nick Heifer, one of the guys in the middle, and very much assuming the role of team leader, taking the answer to the question, very much the man they all looked to. Obviously the 3 guys beside him, nothing like his experience, but it's interesting to see Nick moving forward. He's always been known as the quiet man of Formula 1, and a real change, I think, there in psychology. The other thing that's really interesting is how well the 4 guys get on. There was a genuine rapport between them up there. There was none of this kind of sort of acknowledgement of the existence of the other driver, and that's it. They were all quite matey. They were joking about, they were mucking about, and that's very, very interesting. Obviously, you've got 3 very young drivers, but they were getting on. There was none of that sort of pursed lips thing you see between some of the older guys, and very refreshing. I think the team is a strong team of drivers. Whether they've got the package to do anything with it, or whether they'll be able to actually produce it on the track, I don't know. But I think as far as team spirit is concerned, they've got that one.
The Globecast Radio Channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
And still to come in the second hour of tonight's programme, plenty more from Valencia, where Nick Damon will be talking to the remaining BMW drivers as well as the technical people. What else, Tim?
We've also got another fantastic competition for you, and Cool My Half.
Grand Prix tickets. No Grand Prix tickets. I think we need to build that up more.
Cool My
Half. Grand Prix tickets.
Cool My Half, that's really big as well. Need to build that up. And a World Rally Championship preview. That's all still to come tonight here on Midweek Motorsport.
The Globecast Radio Channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
Sebastian Vettel, it's a busy year for you this year.
Yes, I mean, doing two things, but I think it's not too busy.
You obviously got the third driver for BMW. I mean, and unlike a lot of the other third drivers, you will get time every Friday.
Yes, I'm very pleased with that. I mean, it's a good opportunity for me. So, yeah, we have to see. Interesting season.
But it seemed that the two number one, number two drivers weren't so pleased about losing a bit of the car time on a Friday.
So?
Looking after yourself.
Yes.
Now, obviously combining two different championships is very difficult. I mean, would you say that your foray into Formula 1 last year was one of the reasons why you didn't win the Euro Series?
No, I don't think so. I mean, swapping the cars for sure in the beginning is a big step, but then afterwards I don't think it's a big issue because you get used to it, and in the end it are two cars that you know, so it's not a big problem.
Now, looking to the Formula 1 side of your role, I mean, what are you looking to actually gain during the season?
Sorry, what do you?
What are you looking to get out of the season in Formula 1 side?
Experience, more experience, prepare myself for what is coming next. I mean, you never know. So, and in case, I mean, something happens this year, I have to be there, I have to be ready.
I mean, do you say something... Someone got the very bad flu. Do you feel you're actually able to jump in, say, in Melbourne? Could you do that quickly, or do you need more time in the car first?
No, I mean, you know, Melbourne is the beginning of the season, so this is where I should be ready.
Now, between now and obviously Melbourne, there's a lot of testing doing. Will you be doing much testing, or will it all tend to go with the race drivers?
Yeah, it will be combined with the race drivers, of course.
Now, as someone who hasn't got a vast amount of experience, what do you think you can bring to that?
I think, you know, the team has its reasons why they chose me as a test driver already last year. So then I think, obviously, I mean, the work that I did last year was not so bad. Otherwise, they wouldn't choose me.
But do you think the fact that actually you don't have any preconceptions is an advantage? You don't come in with any baggage, you're coming fresh to Formula 1 to these new regulations. It actually means you have an advantage. You come with a clear mind.
Yes, I mean, of course, now with the biggest step is the tyres. Harder tyres, and it's a big step back because of course you lose in performance. There's lots different the tyre, but yeah, I think everybody has to get used to it, and then it's okay.
Was it very important for you also to keep racing as well as testing?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I love racing. That's why it's very important, I think.
And the reason for choosing the Renault series?
First of all, because GP2 clashed with Formula 1, and also because Renault World Series, I had one race last year. It's a very good series. I mean, very competitive, very easy, and that makes it extremely competitive. So it's a good series. Good car, nice to drive.
So looking towards the future, I mean, if things go well, I mean, where do you see your career being next year?
I don't know. This is something I cannot answer. So you never know. We have to see. First of all, I mean, this year is very important, and then at the end of it's always the same game. At the end of the season, we can see where we are.
But I guess this time last year, you wouldn't have thought you'd be here now.
Exactly. So if you would ask me last year, then for sure I wouldn't answer this.
How important to your career progression do you think being part of the Formula BMW Junior Series was?
I think quite important, because I learned a lot of important things, which I still need now. So I mean, it mainly introduced me to motorsport, motor racing. Professional motor racing.
Okay, thanks a lot. Timo Glock, the fourth driver for Sauber this year, but also a very big program in GP2.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm doing the full season with iSport in GP2 and looking forward to it. We had a pretty strong second half of the season. in 2006 and a good test already at the end of last year, at the end of 2006, and I think we're looking strong and good enough to fight for the championship and for the top three.
So how would you analyse your career? You've done a couple of races in Formula 1, you were quite successful in kart as well. I mean, how come you decided to, I suppose, in a way, slightly step back a level for GP2?
I had a couple of opportunities in Champ Car to stay in America, but my goal is still Formula 1, and I realized pretty early that it's not possible to come back in Formula 1 through Champ Car, and GP2 had a pretty good first year, and I think that's the place to be, to come back in Formula 1, race around the Formula 1 in the European season especially, and I think that's the right way, and that's the reason why I'm driving GP2 as well this year, to stay in racing and be competitive in racing and do the tests with BMW.
How much actual test mileage do you expect to get for BMW? Obviously, there's quite a lot more limited than last, isn't it? So second test driver might not have that many miles.
Yeah, it will be definitely not so much than I would love to do, but it's a chance again, and I think there's a reason why BMW picked me as a second test driver, and there's a reason for it, definitely, and I will definitely not have so many test miles than what you would have normally last year with the regulations, but it's still good to have an open door again into Formula 1.
Comparing the cars you've driven, Formula 1, Champ Car and GP2, in which do you think most suits your style?
My favourite one is still Formula 1. I think it's the quickest car, but actually GP2 it was quite interesting when I did the first test in Barcelona in F1 with BMW Sauber this year, and then following day I was already here in Valencia testing GP2, and that was quite interesting, and the cars are not really similar, but you can compare it pretty good because the aerodynamic works quite the same than in a Formula 1 car, and the driving style is different, definitely. But Champ Car you can't compare it really, because the cars are heavier, the technique is a lot older. It's, I think, standard of 2001 or 2002, and it's a completely different type of race car. So GP2 and Formula 1 is, I think, the best thing to compare.
And certainly given that the profile of GP2 is far higher than F3000 ever was. I mean, we've got Antonio Pizzonia having a go, and he's very established. You've got Giorgio Pantano. So it's a case, if you do beat those guys, people say, yeah, he's pretty good.
Exactly. I mean, that's what the GP2 series showed us the last 2 years. Nico Rosberg did a great job and was champion and got the drive in Formula 1. Last year was Lewis, and we had a couple of great races in GP2, and I think Istanbul was one of the biggest ones, one of the best ones, and I think it's it's a place to be, what I said.
Is your biggest worry the fact that ART seem to have this hoodoo over the car, and they can just, you know, they can put anyone in, they go first?
I mean, I know I tested for ART in 2005, and I know that they have a pretty strong car, but we showed at the test that our performance is good. The question is how much ART showed at that first test, and how much they can get out of it in the next test. But I think we are right on it and be competitive against them.
I think it's fair to say ART probably haven't got their strongest driver line this year, have they?
I think Luca Di Grassi and Amar Müller are quite strong. But we will see. I mean, it depends on. They have to show it now. They sit in a top team, and they have to show what they can do. But I know that we are concentrated on our job and try to really challenge against ART and stop the third championship for them.
Is this very much a one-year plan for GP2? This is your last year. Obviously, we've seen Giorgio is doing 3 or 4 years, and it's almost becoming like the F2 of the late 60s, where people actually made a career in the Division 2. I mean, at this point, you're going, right, this is my last push. If I win it, I get F1, and if I don't get F1, I'll try America again.
It's a difficult question at this point of the year. I think we have to take a look how the first tests with BMW go and GP2, the first races. But my goal is to win the championship. But it depends on how it goes. You never know. I mean, I showed it already last year, that I'm quick enough. And I think it's not when you are not competing against the title, it's not every time only the driver. It's a question about the driver and the team. And when we can show the potential of 2006 into 2007, then I'm not worried about to go back to America or to had to stop my career in F1 maybe.
Timo, best luck. Thanks.
If it's on the road or on the track, it's on Globecast Radio. Music and cars. What a combination.
Right, we've now moved to the Cerca del Regado Duomo in Valencia, where they've given us a very nice lunch. Unsurprisingly, being German, it was pork, but not too bad apart from that. I've been to Valencia before. It's a very interesting circuit. It's got a huge amphitheatre area in the middle here. I'm sitting up top of the Paddock Club, where it would be if this was a Formula One race, and you can see a huge amount of the track. Interestingly, McLaren are here as well, but they're not allowed to run, which is quite disappointing. They've launched their car obviously yesterday in Valencia, but apparently BMW usurped them and had their unique circuit booking today for their shakedown. And so you've got a number of McLaren employees scuttling about, looking kind of discontent at the other end of the pit lane. But none of the big wigs, or perhaps only hiding behind curtains, I expect they got their own spy cameras out to see the car. And the press pack is gathering for those all-important rolling out of the garage shots. Interesting, there's quite a couple of film cameras here, so there we are, 35mm isn't dead, it's not all video these days. And it's really very pleasant weather. It's nice to be in Spain in January rather than England. And this is a really quite pleasant track, I'm looking forward to this. So I think the next thing we'll probably do is record the engine noise, get you ready for the season. Pushing, obviously, this is just an installation lap. It should come in this lap. It's a great sound, isn't it? Back in the pits, in the limiter. So after one installation lap, then another run, which is only two laps, installation of a flying lap, looks like that's it, really. Obviously, they're only allowed to shake down today because it's exclusive booking. I don't know whether they can't do three or four laps later. But two to go, okay. I think Nick was taking it very, very carefully. There's no point where he seemed to be in any way pushing it. But they need to know what's going on generally. They're looking at general alignment. I think they were slightly concerned it might be out of alignment because they were doing a huge amount of corner weights earlier. But we'll see. We'll see what the powers that be think of the whole thing. Mario Tyson, looking back onto last year, how much do you feel you overachieved from your original aims?
Oh, well, it was a good season. I wouldn't say we overachieved a lot. Certainly, it was very rewarding to have two podiums already, to step up from 8th to 5th position. Maybe we had expected to be 6th at the end of the season. But it was a successful season, and everybody in the team can be satisfied about that.
And personally, you went up from being the man who makes the engine to a team principal. How did you find that yourself?
I've been quite busy last year, especially with putting together the building blocks for a new team. Now it's running a lot smoother already, so it's not that demanding anymore. I think we are well on track in shaping the team and looking forward to the season.
How important in the formation of the team for this year was the various instances around Hungary last year that resulted in Jacques leaving the team?
Sorry, again?
How important going forward was it for you to make the decision to remove Jacques from the team?
I think it was important with the future in respect of the future of the team. By mid-season, we had the clear view that Robert would be in the frame for 2007 drive. And then it was clear to me that I wanted to see him in a race car before the end of the year. So it was part of the future strategy.
Ben, were you particularly surprised how well Robert did, though?
I was very positively surprised about what he did in the winter tests, because it was certainly a risk to take him on a year ago as a test driver without having tested him ourselves. After the performance he demonstrated in testing and in the early race Fridays, I was not concerned he would be up to the game to be in the race, to run a car in the race, and that was what he did. So he just continued the strong performance he showed in the early season.
And looking forward to 2007, what's a good result?
We have a clear plan which says points in 2006, podiums 2007, and wins after that. So we want to be on the podium on our own strengths this year.
Philly Ramp, obvious question is, how have things changed over the past 18 months with the coming of BMW, and more importantly, the coming of BMW's money?
I think overall it's quite important, it's quite a good step forward together with BMW, because we have much more resources. I mean, it's not just money, because money it doesn't give you a guarantee for success. But overall, we could increase the headcount drastically, especially in the areas like aerodynamic simulation and so on, where the performance of the car comes.
Now, obviously, there's a drag between bringing on new people and actually being productive. Are we seeing the ultimate result of those new people this year, or we actually have to wait until next year to see the true...
I think we will see it this year. I mean, last year, we had, in my area, had more than 100 people, technicians, and I mean, they all have to find their place, and you all have to integrate them, and we all have to focus on one target. I think this phase is now finished. I think they're all working quite productive, and I think we will see more benefits this year than last year.
Would you say this is probably one of the most challenging years you're going to face? Because not only do you have to develop a car for new tyres, but then you've got next year's car is going to be completely different again. So you've got a kind of a double process.
Yeah, next year's cars might be very similar, because the aero package then is shifted to 2009. Yeah, but I mean, for me, it's for sure one of them. It's the most exciting season, I have to say, because we have more resources available. Expectations are also quite high. We have a good driver lineup, so everything is basically together to achieve good results.
The key change, obviously, is the Bridgestone tyre. I mean, is that going to produce a massive difference, or will it actually end up being something which everyone's going to be exactly the same with?
I think after... There will be a phase where everybody has to learn the tyres and get familiar with the tyres and find the right setup, and the drivers have to treat the tyres properly during a race. But I think after a few races, I think the whole field will come closer together, and then everybody will use the tyres to a very similar extent.
Just about everybody at Ferrari keeps saying, no, we won't have an advantage in the Bridgestone, so they're completely different, there's no advantage for us. Do you believe them?
I can only see that Ferrari was very quick in the beginning of the test sessions with Bridgestone tyres. They were surprisingly quick. Yeah.
And so where are the key focuses for improvements in the car during the year?
It's aerodynamic. Yeah. I would say beginning of season it's also very important to have to use the tyre to the maximum. I think here that is a learning process all the teams have to do, and who is learning quicker, I mean, has an advantage. But then during season it's definitely aerodynamic.
Now, given that aerodynamic is where most of the benefits would come from, do you think your concept of single wind tunnel, very powerful CFD, is going to be more advantageous than the other companies who run, other teams who are running with two wind tunnels?
I mean, we believe in our concept, and also it's not so easy to just to make a wind tunnel, because it's about 2 years to build a wind tunnel. Then you have basically two teams working separate in different wind tunnels. The results are not exactly the same. I think it's a huge effort to run two parallel wind tunnels. And on the other hand, CFD is a tool which gives you a lot of, say, opportunities in a different direction. Yeah? Because in the wind tunnel, you can do all the experimental work in the wind tunnel. But in CFD, you can make the airflow, you can make, say, some problems visible, and you can work with a completely different approach on CFD. And this is what we think, or we believe, that this is overall more efficient than having two wind tunnels.
There's websites for sports cars, websites for F1, World Rally and every championship, which means you'll be surfing for hours to get all the results, but still no interviews. With Globecast Radio, you get all the results. All the results. All the results from motorsport all over the world. And the interviews in one place. Globecast Radio. Because like us, you love your cars and motorsport.
Now, having just said that they're going out just for a couple of laps, Cheeky Monkeys have gone out for another six laps. And interestingly, they're already trying development parts, because the airbox has sprouted a couple of interesting horns halfway down, and very much like the wing shape you get in modern airliners, with a wing with a flip-up at the end, which obviously produces turbulence. So, we're on day one, they're on lap six, and they're already testing developments. That's Formula One for you.
Globecast Radio. We give you a high on horsepower.
Jörg Müller here at the BMW launch. You've just driven down a bit of preview with the Formula BMW. You are Mr. BMW these days, aren't you?
Andy as well. I mean, most of the factory drivers of BMW, they do schools for Formula BMW, which means we are instructors. And to me, it's a fantastic job. You know, when you've got some little kids where you can give your old experience further. Some of them are listening, some not. It's really interesting.
So you yourself, of course, you're running in the World Touring Car up against Andy. I mean, that's another challenge for you. It's the second year, isn't it?
It's the second year of world champion, no, third year of world championship, really. It was last year, wasn't it? Coming year is the third year, really. Yeah. And, well, we had a fantastic car last year. I'm sure we're going to have a good car for the beginning of this season. And it's a tough championship. I mean, there's 10, 15 drivers which can win races. Going to be a tough season again, but I'm going to give everything to get the championship home.
You're one of the guys who's really driven everything. You know, you nearly got into F1 a couple of times, a test driver. You, of course, you've done exceptional work at Le Mans in sports cars, and now you're in touring cars. I mean, why do you think you've been so successful across so many different formulae?
Performance. No, I don't know. I mean, any car I drove, I was somehow successful, and this is why I'm for such a long time with BMW already. I mean, this year is my ninth year in a row, and I did already 2 years in 94, 95 for BMW. I'm very happy that they believe in me and that they still gave me a contract, so hopefully I can prove that I'm still fast enough.
Do you look though to other series? Do you think, oh, I'd like to do Le Mans again, or I'd like to go and do, you know, full-size sports cars?
Racing drivers always like to do the fastest car around, but BMW just have the World Touring cars at the moment, so I'm going to stay with World Touring cars, so...
Going back to the Formula BMW, a couple of the guys obviously who have gotten that now within the team of the F1 team, of course, come from that basic series. So were you someone who was coaching Sebastian a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I was one of his coaches. I mean, there's more than just me. I mean, we have, as I said before, we have a lot of very experienced instructors, and it's a very, very how do you say that in English? It's a very rewarding as well for me, but I mean, the school itself, the instructors, they're very experienced. So they are very experienced drivers. There's no instructors in our school which haven't run races before, so...
And was Sebastian one of the guys who listened then?
He did at the time, yeah. I don't think he's still listening.
Now, Andy's left us and I think ran off to get his plane. So he's obviously your biggest rival in World Touring Cars, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's the World Touring Car champion, and he's the one to beat this year, and that's what we're going for.
Now, do you feel as a, you know, the perhaps the BMW Century, they'd like to perhaps see a different BMW driver, and Andy's won the last two World Touring and the European champion. They quite like one of the German boys to win.
I want a German boy to win. I want me to win, but I think also that the FIA wants to win another factory, so it's going to be tough for us again.
York, thanks a lot. Well, at the end of all this, what have we learned? Well, we've learned that BMW made a new car. We've learned their four drivers seem to get along very well. In fact, their team spirit seems remarkable. One thing I've not mentioned is the goodie bag. Obviously, that's what you want from a launch, a good goodie bag. Well, we got a hat, which was okay. I mean, obviously, I'd have preferred a smart jacket or perhaps an entire BMW car. Be nice. We got a hat. We've also got some earplugs, which are great, because they're the sort of earplugs you give, you know, you see, you know, for tenpence in a big bucket at motorcycle meetings. But these things are the same thing, but they're inside a very, very nice little packet that's got a BMW hologram on. I think the hologram was significantly more expensive than the earplugs themselves. The whole thing must have cost BMW $500,000 to put on. I think they've probably got $500,000 of publicity. It gives a chance for the people who can't get F1 passes to get access to the teams, get access to the cars, And that's why you see so much more publicity across the internet of these launches, because people actually get to them. You know, once you're at the, track, the number of passes issued by FOM is very, very limited. And I had a chat actually with a couple of the old hacks, and they hate these launches. They hate them because basically the hoi polloi of journalism turns up, which I suppose is the way I am at the moment, because I no longer am the owner of an FOM annual pass. But, you know, I think it's great. I think it gives great access. It gives people a chance to see the cars running. And a chance to talk to the drivers and actually get an idea of what's going on. Obviously, they're all very well trained and they're all very well PR'd, but yeah, it was a good experience, a good launch, good fun. Set the plane back to England on time. Yeah, I'll come again next year. Thanks, BMW.
Midweek Motorsport
with John Hindhoff.
Globecast Radio.
And Nick Damon is back from Valencia. He's made it back to the UK and joins us now to talk about today's, or at least this week's, motorsport news with Tim Gray.
Thank you, John. Well, we start with news from Malaysia, and the Prime Minister's played down reports that Formula One could move away from the Southeast Asian country after 2010. The circuit's chairman, Dato' Moczani Tun Mahathir...
What, 10 past 8? Is that 10 past 8 tonight?
Yes. That's a very impressive bit of... I wonder whether you're going for the names or not in this story.
Said recently that the government might not want to fund an extension to the current contract with Bernie Eccleston due to the depletion of the Malaysian currency, the ringgit. At the official launch of the 2007 race on Tuesday, however, Prime Minister Datuk Seri Abdullah enthused that the Malaysian Grand Prix, first hosted in 1999, contributes to the country's image and tourism, and said, "I'm confident that Malaysia's participation will continue to grow." Nick?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of the things, again, where a lot of these new countries who come on board, the race doesn't make any money. In fact, I say new countries, the same in Australia, actually, but Bahrain and even China. The actual race, once they've paid Berlin a huge amount of money, and even before they write down these enormous monolithic circuits that get used twice a year, it loses theoretically money, but of course it's all about international image. And I think later on in that report, the Malaysian PM goes on to say that they get 600 million people viewing Malaysia for 2 days or 3 days a year, and it's the biggest spend of PR that a relatively forgotten country in Southeast Asia gets, and that is the value. I mean, if it makes one international company think, oh, I might put my factory there, you know, it's worth more than 10 or 11 Grand Prix ever cost.
It's more than just tourism, isn't it, Nick?
Exactly. It's all about profile. There's a lot of bragging rights in those sort of areas as well. And it's all about, attracting people, not just tourists, but businessmen to the country. Unfortunately, that's impossible to quantify. So if an opposition spokesman comes and says, how much have you lost on the races? They have to say that. I'm not sure how open Malaysia is on that front. But they say, I've lost millions of ringgit. But the fact is that the spin-off of people now knowing where it is and thinking it's an interesting place to go is massive.
Okay, moving on. Michael Schumacher was interviewed by the New York Times and said, "What do you do in NASCAR? What's exciting about that?" To which Juan Pablo Montoya has said that turning left every 8 seconds is harder than it appears to be.
Right, CT, I'll be honest. I mean, I think when you get the top echelon of any sport, those finite top few is very, very impressive. And there are some very, very good drivers. Jeff Gordon, for example, hopped into a Williams F1 car, I think proved to everybody that if he'd actually, given it a go in Europe and single seats, he'd do them very, very well. I think that, in all honesty, a racing purist, which I suppose you'd have to say Michael Schumacher might come under that format, would think that going left in roundy racing in America isn't particularly skillful. But the reason that there are 10 or 11 top guys is because they are better at doing anyone else. And like anything, a skill is a skill. Personally, I'm actually quite a bit with Michael on this one.
Okay. A1GP, we've spoken about the Team Ireland issues already with
cracked chassis,
Declan, and obviously the loss of Michael Devaney and the gain of Gary Anderson. But we're going to talk about Team India, Nick, because after going, I think, 5 races without scoring a point, they've called up Naren Karthikeyan, the man who said that he had absolutely no interest in racing for A1 Team India.
Last year when he was looking at that Williams drive, and it was like the second test, I think it was, he was saying, "Oh no, I don't need to do Team India. I'm Formula One." Having had a look at some of the testing before Christmas, it was very interesting that the unpronounceable Japanese test driver they've inherited, I think, because Nakajima's son, isn't it, I think? He actually did 5 days before Christmas, and Naren did half a day. So you can see where the priorities lie there. So he's obviously decided he's not going to get an awful lot out of Williams, whatever it may say, however much Tata paid to be on the car, as they are this year.
So he's done, well, where's the PR with the publicity? I'll go and do A1GP. In all honesty, I mean, he is, you know, he's a good driver, isn't he? Particularly if he's still in the car and they get to Brands Hatch, he's an absolute Brands Hatch specialist. I think he won three or four times separately there in F3. So, you know, he will pull that car, provided, you know, they've got a reasonable engineering. I think they were, I mean, Abraham last year, they were doing okay. He'll pull that car right at the front, or certainly this top half dozen.
Now, we had been hoping to talk to Noreen Carthacain on tonight's show. However, he is on a plane at the moment on his way to New Zealand.
That's so a long plane.
It's a long way to go, and even if he had landed there, it's still quite, well, it's breakfast time there at the moment, so we could just about have woken him up and disturbed his jet lag. But New Zealand is where our final news story that we're going to discuss, and it comes from, and a driver from the New Zealand Toyota Racing Series called Jayant Singh. Ever heard of him?
I'm going to say no. You're going to tell me something like, you know, he's done 13 years of Formula something, which I should have heard of, aren't you?
No, you probably won't have heard of him. He is in the Toyota Racing Series.
Right.
He is currently lying 13th in that championship after three rounds. Fourth round of the series is actually this weekend at Taupo as one of the supports to the A1GP. His website says he's the ultimate Kiwi battler.
Right.
Who, with his friends and family, improvises enough to make the starting grid at each round. So,
I'm not sure that's necessarily what you want, to be honest, at that point.
I think improvising on a term in terms of
what you think,
money,
I'll try
rather
with three
than,
wheels, I'll try
changing the setup of the car.
Yeah.
So obviously someone who's struggling for budget.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's not a word you see often in press. It's improvising.
He's struggling for budget, clearly, but he's not going to make it onto the grid for Taupo this weekend.
I'm heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken.
And that's because he's currently being held in custody in connection with two robberies involving
no.
200,000 New Zealand dollars,
no, really?
Which are
fantastic.
Understood or alleged to have been used to fund his campaign.
He's a shade of James Munro, isn't it?
It's he's certainly been improvising, hasn't he?
That's not so much improvising, because that's actually having a plan, and having a plan that involves a balaclava. You know, that's pretty impressive. That goes down that big list of the crooks of motorsport.
We're not going to name any of the others because our lawyers won't let us.
Absolutely not, but I'm just wondering if he gets out on bail, can he still drive?
Depends if they've taken his licence away. Well, the final thing we need to get Nick Damon to do is ask our second competition of the night. This is for tickets to the British Grand Prix at Silverstone. One pair of tickets available in this competition. And Nick, what is the question?
Well, I'll go with the theme of the programme. I want to know, where is the BMW Sauber team based? Is it A, Britain, B, Switzerland, or C, Swaziland?
So that's A, Britain.
Yep.
B, Switzerland.
Yep.
Or C, Swaziland.
Mm.
Which would be very convenient
for
Kyle,
African massive.
If you know the answer, then all you have to do is text the word Globecast, followed by the letter corresponding to your answer, A, B, or C, and your name to 60300. Text the charge at £1. Network charges may also apply, and the lines close.
What number was that again?
60300.
Okay, I'm texting now.
I don't think you're allowed.
Ah, damn.
I think once we see Globecast A, Nick Damon.
Yeah, it's not going to go too well, is it? It's a good prize, though. I'm quite happy winning
it. But you'll be there anyway, so who cares?
Yeah, I suppose so. Might get some more friends in.
Nick Damon, I'm sure you jet-lagged after coming back from Valencia on a flight which lasted almost an hour and three quarters. Thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Diego.
Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
Midweek Motorsport on 0157 and 0157.org. Of course, get the emails coming in with your comments on this week's motorsport stories. Now, of course, we are moving very rapidly towards the start of the 2007 World Rally Championship season. A mere
Well, it seems like a fortnight, actually, but it's a little bit longer than that. It was the first week of December when we finished last year's championship season on Wales Rally GB in Cardiff. And this weekend, it all kicks off again with the classic season opener at Monte Carlo, or at least finishing in Monte Carlo. Ines Marlow joins us on the phone to have a look at that, and indeed the whole season. These off-seasons, Ines, are getting shorter than shorter, aren't they?
They certainly are, John. I think it's about 7 weeks, actually, since you and I were down in deepest Wales.
46 days will be from finish to start of the season. That's absolutely right.
And I'm sure the guys haven't actually been sitting at home or on a beach or anything with their feet up. So, I mean, they've been in cars as well. It's not even they've had a proper break. But with the money that they're paid, they don't deserve a proper break, do they? So they should be out in the cars working hard. And, of course, yes, it's... Rally Automobile Monte Carlo this weekend once again, one of the classic pillars of the championship as it has been over many years. And there's a few changes to the route this year, and of course Citroën is the real story, because they're threatening a cautious approach in their new car.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the rally itself. It is the 75th Rally Monte Carlo, perhaps at the end of this, but let's look forward to the whole of the season. Ines, as you mentioned, they've got this new car. This is the new Citroën C4. Now, in fairness, I think they're playing this down a little bit, although I did tip Ford and Marcus Grönholm for the championship this year. But this isn't a brand new car in the strictest sense of the word, because they've had this car designed, built and indeed running for the better part of a year. They were originally going to introduce this car this time last year.
They certainly have, yeah. They've been working on it quite a bit. And of course, I think they're doing that thing in a football match, you know, where you see somebody goes down and clutches their leg and says, oh, I don't feel too good, and they hobble about, and the next minute they're sprinting like an Impala. Well, I think we've got the driver, and Sebastian Loeb is going, well, my arm hurts a bit, and it's not really 100%, and I haven't got full movement in it, and I'm in a new car, and I think as soon as the lights go, we're going to suddenly find that Mr. Loeb is slightly healthier than it would appear, and I think the car will be slightly more proven. So I'm not fooled by that at all. I think they're going to be fast out of the box. But as we've seen before with developments on the Focus and one or two other vehicles, they're likely to have teething troubles. So it will be interesting to see how the Citroën package with Sebastian Loeb actually stands up to Mr. Grönholm, who, despite going very close last season, he did have a storming season. So we could actually be in for a battle this year.
Well, Marcus Grönholm says that he personally, never mind the rest of the Ford team, is planning a cautious start. He expects the conditions on the event to be particularly difficult. He said, I want to win, but I'm not going crazy for victory. You can never drive flat out in Monte because the road conditions are so unpredictable. Now, in having said that, he did win this event last year, which was his debut for Ford, and he does quite like the event. But I think, again, there's a lot of mind games being played here between what are clearly going to be the top two teams this year.
Have you ever seen a rally driver who drives cautiously?
No.
I don't believe either of them. Neither of them are going to be driving cautiously. They don't care what drops off the car. They're going to be driving flat out from the word go. So I don't believe any of that, but with the change in venue, they're moving north back to some classic stages around Valence.
Yes.
It's going to be unfamiliarity. So those notes that they've been fine-tuning over the last two or three seasons, they're out the window, and it might make a bit more of a level playing field for one or two of the other runners near the front. So it means that, yeah, we could have more of a battle between Grönholm and Loeb, but it also means that Solberg, if he can get that car to get going again, of course Subaru have changed tyres this year, that might help. They're now on BF Goodrich tyres, so the Pirelli excuse about, oh no, we haven't got a suitable tyre for these conditions, that's out the window. And it'll be interesting to see if they can get the Subaru going again. And with the new stages that everyone's starting afresh making notes on, you know, could be an interesting three-way battle there.
Well, effectively, we've got six top teams this year. The three, in inverted commas, manufacturer teams, Citroën back, as Ines has said, with the C4, the Citroën Total World Rally Team, BP Ford World Rally Team, Subaru, on the same tyres as everyone this year, BF Goodrich, Michelin, call them what you will, have no competition this year after the pullout from Pirelli.
Stobart, the M Sport Ford Rally Team, with relatively new cars, Matt Wilson and Jari Matti Latvala, who's been an absolute star already. Add to those Henning Solberg for all 16 rounds of the series, and you've got to say, Innes, that Malcolm Wilson's lot from Cumbria are actually looking quite strong.
Yeah, they certainly are. Now, I spoke to Matt Wilson at Autosport International last weekend, and I did suggest to him that he'd made the first album and it was successful, and this is perhaps his second difficult album, because he's had his learning year and it's a steep learning curve, and now he's got to actually show pace. And it's very well we use the word caution again, but he did have to drive cautiously last year, because he was a young man in a very fast car on a very steep learning curve, and if he'd rolled it into a ball six times, then he wouldn't have been very popular, not only with the team but probably around the dinner table in the evenings as well. So he needs to find some pace, because Latvala is going to be very fast, and we saw that in Wales, and we were hugely impressed with him, weren't we?
Oh, yes, we were. Now, as we look through the other teams, we've got a bit of a hybrid team for the fifth of the six WR, main WRC teams, that being the OMV Kronos Citroën World Rally Team. They ran separately in 2006. The joining forces for 2007, too, clearly of the better privateer teams. We've got Manfred Stoll and Daniel Carlson driving 06 Citroën Zaras, and again you can't count these guys out, because the joined up team have clearly got a lot of experience, and with Manfred Stoll you always expect one or two fireworks, and Daniel Carlson perhaps a little bit steadier, but he will be there or thereabouts at the end.
He certainly will be, and he's going to be quick on events like Swedish and possibly Norway as well, which is a new event to the calendar. This Belgian Kronos team, Manfred Stoll, I'm very impressed with him, because he's the type of driver that you've looked at over the last 5 or 6 years and thought, well, yeah, he'll get the car round and he'll gather you something inside the top six. But in Wales, and over a couple of the later events last season, he was right there up on a pace. And I remember even Marcus Gronholm commenting in one of our interviews on Rally GB, looking over his shoulder and thinking, yes, that Manfred Stoll's going quite quick, and actually seeing him as a serious contender. So, I'd be very interested to see if they can get that car going. And, of course, Stoll is returning to Azara this year, fourth in the championship last season.
He had a second place as well, didn't he? I mean, he was on the podium a few times. Second place, his best result.
Yep, right up there. And looking around the other teams, of course, Loeb, he's got Danny Sordo supporting again. Solberg is with Chris Atkinson. That's going to be do or die on that Subaru design, I think, because they've had a few problems with it. Last year was absolute write-off for Petter Solberg, who was champion in 2003. Winless last year. Hugely frustrated, desperate for the whole year to end, and I think he was probably the first man out of Parc Fermé at the end of Wales Rally GB, running away from the car and never wanting to see it again. He's had his little holiday. Hopefully they've managed to tweak a few things to get the car going again. New tyres, a new season. If they're on the same tyres as other people and the car doesn't work, then I'm afraid Petter and Phil Mills, his Welsh co-driver, I'm going to think we're about to write off 2007 as well. So all eyes will be on the Subaru to see what sort of pace that achieves straight away out the box.
Amazingly enough, Solberg only getting four podiums and no rally victory for Subaru for, I think, the first time ever since they've contested the full World Rally Championship. And that really was a disaster for them. And I do think that this is do or die season. We said that about them last year, but this year, on the same tyres as everyone else, they really have to pick up their game a little bit. And I think Solberg is the man to do it and will drive that team forward. I don't know how much you know about the sixth team, the Munchies Ford World Rally Team. It looks like Munchies, and that's what I'm going to be calling them. Luis Perez Compank and Juan Pablo Reyes. Reyes, I know very little about. Compank was, I thought, was another one of the finds of last year, and they've got 10 rounds this year prior to a full season next year in WRC Focus 06 cars.
Yeah, I mean, we're either going for Munchies, or we perhaps say that Compaq and Reyes are a pair of little monkeys. I'm not quite sure which way we look at it. The car looks quite nice. It's got that a kind of a Mitsubishi sort of look with the red and white and black on it.
Black, yeah, very much.
But as far as the team, we don't even know how to pronounce them yet. We might find they're so fast that we'll be saying the team name more often than we realise. But I think you would be looking at them to be sweeping up the final points in the postings rather than threatening the podiums early on. I really can't look far beyond Ford, Subaru and Citroen for those, but we'll look forward to seeing the Munchies, or the Monkeys, however they'd like to be known, and perhaps they'll prove us wrong and it'll be the word on everyone's lips after the Monte Carlo.
Quick word about Mitsubishi. The Mitsubishi Motorsport team are seeing now that they're trying to get Zevi Pons back into the World Rally Championship after Pons said he was going to sit out the season. He could drive the 2005 Lancer in Monte Carlo, Sweden and Norway, apparently. Former production and junior WRC rally winner Juho Hanninen likely to start the event with Tony Gardemeister signed for the full season. And Mitsubishi really a team like Subaru who have not had the success over the last few years.
Yeah, isn't it bizarre? And you think back a few years, sort of the Tommy Mäkinen era for Mitsubishi, absolutely dominating the events. The same with Subaru at times when they had Colin McRae, Carlos Sainz driving there. And, you know, you'd have said, you know, Subaru, Richard Burns as well, that was the car to have. And it's just these things turn. And as we look back over through the 70s and 80s, where there was a Ford domination, and then we had even, you know, the Quattro, and then we had Lancia, and these teams are absolutely at the top of the tree, and nobody can touch them, and then suddenly they fade. And Subaru are certainly going through that lean time at the moment. Mitsubishi have been through there, and you can't really see Mitsubishi coming back to dominate the sport in the same way that they did 10 years ago. You just can't see it happening. So I think it's a lot to do with funding as well, because the manufacturer teams, if somebody high up in Mitsubishi or Subaru suddenly says, how much did we spend on motorsport last year? And the accountant sort of mutters the figure and they say, I'm sorry, could you say that a bit louder? And then they look at how many cars they've sold and they think, well, hang on, that doesn't quite tie up. We've spent those many million dollars and we've only sold 150 of these Tommy Mäkinen edition cars. What's going on? So funding is behind it often. At the moment, obviously Ford are quite happy to plough money in there. Citroen, you know, we had the Kronos situation last year. This year they're back with a factory car, so there's obviously money going in there again. But of course we had the situation only 2 years ago where we had Peugeot and Citroen both running, the same motor company looking after those two brands. Yep. Suddenly thinking, hang on, we're spending an enormous amount of money to compete against each other and take car sales off each other, because at the end of the day, motorsport is for selling cars, not just for your and my entertainment, John.
Hard to believe, but absolutely true. No time to talk about British talent. We'll hold that over perhaps till next week. Guy Wilkes not getting the drive on the Monte anyway. He should be starting in Norway, so we hear, in the 05 focus. Quick word, final word from you about who is going to win the championship then. If you had to put your house on it, Innes, and you had to incur the wrath of Ali, who would you pick for 07?
If you're going for the safe bet, you'd have to go for Sebastian Loeb, however much his little arm's hurting him in that poor car he's going to have to suffer. But I'd love to see Marcus Gronholm really push him hard this year. And as a final word, if we're going to come back for a Brits coverage at some point, let's just say congratulations to Niall McShay, MBE Services to Motorsport.
Very richly deserved. Must be your turn soon. Innes Marlowe, thanks for joining us tonight on Midweek Motorsport.
0157.org, Globecast Radio.
Well, it's that time of the programme again as Midweek Motorsport opens its doors to another Call My Hoof quiz game. Our Hoofmaster is with us here in the studio, and that's Tim Gray.
Good evening.
And good to have you back, sir. Good to have you back. Introduce our contestant for this evening, if you would, please.
Our contestant for this evening is someone whose knowledge of circuit racing is possibly unknown, because he is one of our rally experts, live on the phone from Fareham in Hampshire. It's Innes Marlowe.
Hello.
Yes.
I know people keep turning right. Is there knowledge beyond that I need?
Now, Innes, you haven't heard this before, so we'll quickly, for you and those people who are perhaps joining us on Midweek Motorsport for the first time, run down the rules of Call My Hoof. It all started when we noticed that there were several implausibly named drivers in one of the championships that we were getting a lot of email press releases from. People like Philippe Albuquerque.
Albuquerque.
And what was the other one, Tim?
The other one was Hoping Tung.
Ah, yes, of course. And that prompted listeners, we asked listeners to email in their most plausibly named drivers. And we actually got so many of them that we decided to make a quiz out of them. The emails have kept coming in, and we are now up to which letters of the alphabet?
This is week 9, so we're doing the letter I, but also because there aren't enough I's, we're doing the letter J. So the letters I and J today.
Now, it's important to remember, Innes, that everything you hear tonight is real in some way, shape or form. Yeah. There's nothing made up. So these names that you hear are real. What we're going to ask you to identify whether they are, or indeed are not, racing drivers. So all you have to do is tell us whether they are or are not racing drivers.
Okay, do I get additional points for telling you it was Prefab Sprout and ELO on the little musical bit?
casting, you see, he's worried because he's casting for extra points already.
Let's go through the leaderboard so far.
I was just going to say there's been a disparity
this is
people's
week 9.
Yes.
Which means we've had 8 previous contestants, and right at the bottom of the leaderboard is Alan Hyde, who scored just 2 out of 8.
Oh, he's a picko though, isn't he?
Nick Damon, our Formula One correspondent, also scored 2 out of 8.
I don't like the sound of this.
Graham Goodwin from DailySportsCar.com scored 3 out of 8.
And missed out on at least 3 sports car drivers, which really upset him.
John Hintoff scored 4 out of 8.
I was the guinea pig, in fairness.
Martin Haven scored 5 out of 8. Declan Brennan has scored 6 out of 8, as did last week's contestant, who was Simon Hill. Mm. And our leader so far from California, Jeremy Shaw, who has 7 out of 8.
My goodness, that is good, isn't it?
So that is very good, and I think a round of applause for Jeremy.
Yeah, super. From Irvine, California. So then, Innes, you've heard what it's all about. Are you ready to play Call My Hoof?
I believe I'm as ready as I'll ever be. You're after a yes or a no, basically, aren't you?
Well, driver or not a driver. Okay. Wheel or no wheel, as it were.
There are eight names on my piece of paper, and you can have them in any order you want. So just pick a number, and we'll give you the driver that matches that number.
Number 7, please.
Number 7 is one beginning with the letter J, and that's Guts Gyonop... Hang on, I've got to learn how to pronounce this. Guts Gyopnai.
Guts Gyopnai. Interesting name, sounds vaguely Eastern European.
Gyopnai, which is Gyopnai.
Yeah, Gyopnai, I would have said there. Sounds vaguely Eastern European, perhaps, but is it a driver or not a driver, Innes?
Well, I suspect it's probably something rude in a foreign language, but it's so bizarre, I'd say it's a driver.
And you're right. It is a driver. And Tim, what has he driven?
He races in the Japanese GT Championship.
Of course he does. We all knew that. So 1 out of 1 so far. Good start. Good early points. Mm. Can't take them away from you. Pick another number, Innes.
Number 5, please.
Number 5, beginning with the letter I. Mule Idris.
Mule Idris.
Mule?
Mm. Yeah, that's spelled M-O-U-L-A-Y.
Mule.
Mulevu by ABBA?
No, M-O-U-L-A-Y.
Sorry.
Idris, which is I-D-R-I-S-S.
Well, it doesn't sound bizarre again to me, so I go for that's a driver.
It's not a driver, unfortunately. It's a town in northern Morocco.
You've got that from the Dakar coverage, haven't you? Mule Idris is a town in northern... It sounds like he should be Gwyndaf Evans' co-driver, frankly. Another number, please. 1 out of 2.
Oh, now you're starting to test my memory of numbers, aren't you?
You've had 7 and 5.
Over number 8.
Number 8, back to the letter J. Benjamini.
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 Not made up, remember. It is a real something. Benjamini.
Well, it doesn't sound like an expression that you'd want shouted at you. Benjamini. I think I'll go for a driver.
And you're right. Ben Jamini is a driver. 2 out of 3. And what has he raced in, Tim?
He's done the Dutch Formula Ford Championship. And he's also done the Dutch Formula Renault and German Formula Renault Championships.
Yeah, that's where I'll have heard of him then, yeah.
We must make the point at this stage that we're only talking about circuit racing here, so Innes is well out of his frame of reference and doing very well with 2 out of 3. Let's have another number. You've had 7, 8 and 5.
Number one. Another beginning with the letter I. Leandro Iglesias.
Leandro Iglesias.
As in Julio?
Same spelling, yes.
Leandro.
We're not saying if he's related or not.
Leandro, it's probably a stadium, isn't it, for singers?
Driver or not a driver, Innes?
Driver.
He's got another one right.
Definitely has.
Is he a relation?
As far as I know, he isn't. No.
Now, what is he driving?
When he goes to the grid, does he begin at the begin?
He begins at the beginning, I think.
That'll be it.
What does he drive, Tim?
In 2001, he was racing in Formula Nissan.
Ah, really? Before it became World Series by Renault powered by Nissan?
Yes.
Ah.
Number three. The law of averages tells me that I'm running out of drivers now.
No, you see, Tim is far more hoofmaster. He is an evil hoofmaster.
I'm trying to be clever.
So you never know.
It's not necessarily a 50-50 split.
I won't
here.
Try and be clever again then.
No, don't do that.
Number three.
Not one of your better points.
No.
Number three is Luka Ibrahimovic.
Yeah. He sounds like he owns a football club.
Luka's a proper name, isn't it?
Luka is a proper name.
Ibrahimovic or
Ibrahimovic, which is Ibrahimovic.
Well,
it's got a sort of Slavic property.
Well, it sounds like the type of guy that Jose Mourinho would be signing. And if that
or working for.
Yeah, depending on what day of the week it is. It's a proper name, so I, with your 50-50 split that obviously isn't happening, I'll go for a driver again.
He's not a racing driver. In fact, he's no longer alive. He was a Croatian friar who led an uprising against the Ottomans.
Right. How did he get to work?
I don't think they'd invented the internal combustion engine by then.
Certainly
so he couldn't
have car.
But why he would want to uprise against a nice chest at the bottom of your bed, I've got no idea. Let's have another number, please.
Four.
Number four. Sumio Iijima.
Sumio Iijima.
We must be getting to the point of making some up here, I would have thought.
Nothing is made up. These are all real people.
Remember I said these are all real people, places or things.
Sumio, S-U-M-I-O, that's his Christian name. Iijima, which is Iijima.
Iijima.
Well, he's got the wrong type of letters in his name that don't really make sense, do
they? Well, I'll tell you, he's Japanese.
Yeah, I don't think he can be a driver.
You think he's not
doesn't
a driver?
A driver.
No. Not a driver, oh dear, he's right. Oh. Is that four he's got now? That's four right,
that's,
isn't it?
That's four correct, so you're equal on points with John.
Half points is great.
Let me just tell you who Sumio Iijima was. He was born on May the 2nd in 1939, and he was a physicist who is best known for discovering carbon nanotubes in the soot of an arc discharge reactor, and that was back in 1991.
Yeah, of course.
I thought that was probably him.
You saw that in an article in New Scientist, didn't you? Which you religiously subscribed to.
Yeah, he would have driven in the Clio Championship, given a chance, I'm sure.
number two and number six are the remaining numbers.
Did you say number two? Because yes. I have now run out of remembering what number I had. Number two, please.
Number two is Diego Iencinella.
Oh.
Diego Iencinella.
No, Iencinella, which is
Iencinella.
I-E-N-C-I-N-E-L-L-A.
Iencinella. Iencinella. Driver or not a driver? Must hurry you here. I've got a feeling he's Googling these guys.
No,
what did you say?
I'd do such a thing.
He said he's not a driver and he's wrong because he raced in Argentinian sports prototypes.
Ah.
So finally, number six.
Number six. Giovanni Giovanchi.
Oh, nice bit of alliteration.
Sounds like a driver straight away, but let's hear the spelling.
Giovanno, J-O-V-A-N-O, and Giovanchi is J-O-V-A-N-K-E.
J-O-V-A... Giovanchi?
Yes. Yeah.
Driver or not a driver?
No, I reckon not.
And you are correct! He's not a driver! He is, in fact, Tim.
He's not actually a person. He is a traditional Macedonian folk song.
Ah, oh, yes.
Where do you get this from?
And that's he's singing it to us now.
you can have an extra point if you can sing it. I'll give you.
The Performing Rights Society won't allow us. Won't allow us to do that.
So, Innes, you have done, I think, much better than you would have imagined. With all of that being on circuit racing and not rallying, you have got 5 out of 8.
All right.
Tremendous score.
Thank you very much. So that must be about the same number that you got then, John, wasn't it?
Sadly, it was one more. We can cut him off now.
What about Alan Hyde? How did he get on?
He only got 2.
All right. Looks like I've beaten the two of you then.
Well done, Innes.
Lovely to speak to you.
You're joint fourth. Joint fourth on the leaderboard.
Well, I'm happy with the away leg. I'm looking forward to the home leg when I ask you about Welsh co-drivers through the ages.
Of which Mr. Idris wasn't one. Innes Marlowe and Cole Myhuff for this week. Another willing contestant next week on Midweek Motorsport with Cole Myhuff. And that's just about it for this week's Midweek Motorsport, the third in Series 2. Thanks to all our guests tonight. Hope you've enjoyed it. Don't forget the podcast if you've missed some of it. And there's 2 repeats, 1 at 2 o'clock in the morning here in the UK and 1 at 10 o'clock tomorrow as well. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. On a packed show next week, we're sending Alan Hyde to Amsterdam. We'll never get him back, Tim.
That's probably true. Some breaking news, and that is from GP2. Dane Christian Backwood has signed with Dave Price Racing for 2017. Teammate expected to be announced shortly, but remember, Dave Price Racing and Carlin not merging after all now.
They've had a bit of a falling out before they even merged.
We'll have more on that story next week, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to Christian Backwood.
And some sports car news as well next week. We'll catch up with some of the latest sports car stories coming out of the Autosport International show ahead of Daytona. More testing for them and also some new driver car combinations. That's all next week on Midweek Motorsport. From Tim Gray and myself, it's bye for now.
Goodbye.
We fill our airtime with news about cars. We go on the road to give you honest feedback. We're trackside and on the stages to bring you news as it happens and results. Globecast Radio. Love cars. Love motorsport. Love music. Globecast Radio.